I consider it a privilege. When I was not able to communicate with all you folks, but I saw you all coming online, I just felt a deep sense of community and appreciation and fellowship for seeing all the beautiful faces of brethren that we've known for so long. Thank you for coming. Now, usually at the General Convention, we have after our services, it's usually a smaller group. We like it to be interactive. So I thought maybe this would be an interactive opportunity as well. Now we have 200 people online. That decreases interactivity a little bit. But Brother Stefan will have kind of control over questions. If you do have questions and you voice them and I hear it, that'd be fine. But I think Stefan has another way of indicating to me that there's a question. We can entertain those as we go, or we can have questions at the end. Judging on the number of people online, that latter might prove to be the most workable. But we'll see. We really do like interactivity when it's feasible or possible. I think that all of us have been a little surprised. I have been by the turn of events in recent times that do not match anything I have seen in my lifetime. When this virus struck, I heard some preliminary reports, and then finally I heard that President Trump was closing down all travel from China. Well, that caught my attention. Never heard of that before. And then after a while, he cut down all transportation from Europe. Well, I hadn't heard of that ever. So things are different. And it's not possible for us to look in the scriptures and find with precision every little thing that is going to happen. But the effects of this virus and the shutdown that it has effected has been remarkable on the world economy. And when you talk about the world economy, now we're getting into an area where prophetically we have learned from others and generated ourselves some opinions about how the economic winds of difficulty are going to affect the incoming period of the kingdom. So we're going to talk about that quite a bit today, about the economic causes, consequences of what we have seen. We have a PowerPoint. I'd like to start sharing that with you now. I hope that you can all see that. This tells you something about the area that we're going to discuss today. Now, in 1 Kings 19, we have the experiences of Elijah that pretty much give us an outline of the time of trouble at the end of the age. It's a very broad outline. We're going to look at that and try to see where we are today within that outline of ending events. And then we're going to go to Acts, the 27th chapter, and that's where Paul is on a long voyage to Rome. There's a lot of experiences Paul goes through, and building on some thoughts by Brother Ray Luke, 25 to 30 years ago, we have some interest in how Acts 27 and Paul's voyage will take us through the history of the harvest to the establishment of the kingdom, and it focuses even more attention on the closing 14 years of the harvest. We'll look at that and see where we are with respect to that. And thirdly, we're going to look at the seven last plagues. Now, as soon as I mention this subject of plagues, you all know that there's different interpretive thoughts about the plagues. We favor the thought that the plagues take you through the harvest. We'll talk about it from that point of view. But we're going to try to integrate 1 Kings 19, Acts 27, and the seven plagues of Revelation to see where we are in this sequence and see how the current world experience seems to be focusing our attention on the latter times that are involved here. Now, if we have time, we'll talk about the time aspects of this, but we'll see. We'll see how far we get into that. Now, when you think about the end of the age, we all think of three prominent periods of time. We start the end of the age and the harvest work with the return of Christ, and we use the date 1874. Now, that date, of course, comes primarily, historically, from the prophecy in Daniel, the 12th chapter, about 1,335 days, And those prophecies are applied similar ways by the mainstream of the brethren pretty consistently. That's where we get the date 1874. There's other ways as well, but that's the fundamental way. So we start the end of the age with 1874. But the time of trouble really doesn't pick up until World War I. And so that's the next date of interest that the brethren see pretty much in harmony, that the Gentile times ended in 1914, and we've been in a period of overturning of the old empires and old kingdoms from that time forward. But actually, in our day, truth be told, the old empires are really gone. We're going to talk about that fact a little bit more as we go through. And finally, we come to the establishment of the kingdom. We're not quite there. Oh, yes, of course, since Jesus has returned as king with a golden crown, in a sense, we're in a period of the kingdom, but not really for the blessing of all the families of the earth. We're still in a transition period. We're building to the kingdom, and the signs of difficulty we see in the experiences are pushing us closer and closer to that time, much closer than we've ever been before. You know, Paul said 2,000 years ago, the time is closer than when we first believed. And may I say, the time is now getting remarkably close for the establishment of the kingdom. So we're going to be talking about this period of time of the harvest. There's 1874. There's the time of trouble. And there's the establishment of the kingdom to bless all the families of the earth. So we're going to start with 1 Kings 19. And because our time is limited, we're going to tell you a lot that you already know that is in that chapter. In 1 Kings 19, you have Elijah that has fled from Jezebel. And this follows 1260 years. We'll have that on the diagram coming up. 1260 years of the affliction of the church by the papal hierarchy. And that ended in 1799. That's a commonly accepted date. We'll just proceed on that basis. And then after that time, after Elijah suffered those 3.5 years of difficulty in the wilderness, he stepped forward and there was a great change. You remember there was a confrontation with the priests of Baal that were sponsored by Jezebel. And in this confrontation, you had two altars. And the Baal worshipers put their animal on the altar and called to their God to consume their offering, and it never worked. And so finally, about mid-afternoon, Elijah went into operation. He put 12 barrels of water on that altar as though to make it even more difficult to burn. He prayed to God, and God answered by fire out of heaven. The sacrifice was consumed, and everybody then knew Jehovah was God. And this view is right rather than the other. Now, I think that's a picture of a confrontation at the end of papacy's time between the papal view of atonement and the Protestant view of atonement. Papacy said you had to be part of us, and you had to go to Mass, and you had to do penances. And the Protestant view said you have to believe in the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ. And that maintained the day. But it wasn't a triumph altogether quickly. You know that Elijah then had to flee for his life. He fled to Mount Horeb. Along the way, he was fed twice. He was fed by the angel, I think representing the first feeding of the church through the Adventist movement. And then he lay down to sleep after his first feeding. Well, that reminds you of the parable of Matthew 25. The parable of the bridegroom, when the bride and all the attendants of the bride slept until finally they were awakened by the midnight cry, and I think that's the Lord's return. And so Elijah was touched by an angel a second time that aroused him out of sleep, and he fed him again, and he went in the strength of that food for 40 days to Mount Horeb. I think there we have a picture of the feet of the church a second time during the Harvest Truth Movement. And they went in the strength of that for 40 days from 1874 to 1914, a day for a year. And there Elijah saw a vision of what we think represents the time of trouble. And there's three parts to this. You see these indicated here. He saw the wind ravaging the mountains, but the Lord was not in the wind. He saw a great earthquake. The Lord wasn't in the earthquake. Then he saw a great fire ravaging the landscape, and the Lord was not in the fire. But shortly after that, he heard a still small voice, and that represents the blessings of the kingdom, finally when peace dawns. So we're going to look at this experience and see if we can assign some time points to this experience. And here's our suggestion. There's the 1260 years that ended with 1799, and then the Adventist movement anticipated the return of Christ in 1843. Now, William Miller at that time had the 1260 years about right, only 1 year different than we customarily use today. And he had the 2300 days of Daniel pointing to 1843, and that was why he believed the Lord would return in 1843. Now, it didn't happen, and after that disappointment is when I think after this first meeting, Elijah slept again and had to be awakened again, and I think that was in 1874. But this time between 1799 and 1843, there was a lot of truth that was surfacing. There were a lot of Adventists that began to realize the Trinity is not right, that in fact the immortality of the soul is not right, it's going to be a resurrection of the dead, and they began to get a focus on many of the time prophecies more sharply. So a lot of nourishment in this first reading of Elijah. But then it was 31 years more before finally the second feeding began, a period of 40 days, or rather a period in which Elijah went on the strength of that food for 40 days to Mount Horeb, and then he saw the wind, the earthquake, and the fire. Now, I think we can even put a date on some of these. Now, in 1914, that's a date pretty much all the brethren would agree to. This began the wind of war. And you remember, even in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel saw a vision of the great sea, and the wind strove upon the sea, and out of this wind-swept sea came four world empires. Well, the winds represent the winds of war that stirred up this and actually produced these empires. So I think this first period of wind in Elijah represents the winds of war. And it turns out, contrary to what we collectively, the brethren at that time, thought, it wasn't one war, it was two in a series. And I think those two world wars ending in 1945 essentially swept away the old governments. Now, sometimes the brethren wonder, has the image been smitten? Most brethren would say, yeah, it was 1914. Some feel that maybe it's the Armageddon clash. But I have perhaps a minority opinion here that not only has the image been smitten in 1914, but I actually think that image is gone. What we see today and the experience of the world is not the same world empires that previously subdued Israel. By 1945, those empires had mostly been swept away, and Israel thereafter became independent. And I think in Daniel chapter 2, it talks about the image being broken into pieces, and the wind, there's the winds of war, will sweep them away, and they became as the chaff of, now notice the symbology, the summer threshing floor. Not the winter time of trouble that ends the harvest, but the summertime in the middle of the harvest when those empires were swept away. Well, we have another episode here. That's the earthquake. And that earthquake, I think, really shook apart the old colonial empires and their holdings that remain. Now, you know that after 1945, the British Empire, that had so much authority and power in the world, began to free their colonies. The first one, the first major one to get freedom, was India in 1947. And then Israel right after that in 1948. And then many of the black African countries in the 60s. And then Indochina in the 70s. But finally, it wasn't until 1989 that the Soviet Union and their satellite countries that they had dominated for so long began to change. And in 1989, from Poland all the way through Romania, all of these countries got their liberty again. It was just one after the other, all in the same year. I propose that that year ends the earthquake breakup of all of the old large powers that imposed their will on satellite nations. Now, I remember that year, 1989. I remember being at a convention in Palo Alto in that year, and I was quite amazed. I didn't expect what happened in 1989. I had not expected the Soviet Union to actually fall apart before the end of the harvest, but it did, and we still had years to go. And that began us thinking, just where are we in connection with all these episodes? And at that time, we pretty much concluded with other brethren that we were at the close of Plague 5. We'll get to that in a moment. But that leaves one more episode, the fire phase. That will end at the kingdom. It'll go for quite a while. But what is that fire phase? Well, at one time, I thought fire was a brief period of anarchy. But now I think it's a prolonged period of a different kind of anarchistic environment. I think that fire is the rise of Islamic insurgency. It was not long after 1989 that we became deeply involved in that. I remember sitting in an airport, coming home from a convention, watching CNN screen, you know, in the airport, and it talked about Iraq invading Kuwait. What was that, 1990, 1991, around there? And I remember thinking to myself, what is this about? Is this just a passing episode, or is this the beginning of something new and different? And I think now that it is that. It was the beginning of something new and different. It was the beginning of a disruption in the Arab world that will finally take us to the kingdom itself. Now, not long after that, we became involved in the first Gulf War. And then after that, 9/11. Excuse me. No, more things than that. The Arab Spring, and then 9/11, and then the second Gulf War, and then the Syrian upsettlement, and Afghanistan. And we're still out of all those problems today. It's been an unending sequence of problems in the Arab world. Still today, we have problems in Syria, in Afghanistan, in Yemen. Conflict of kind of by proxy between Saudi Arabia and Iraq. I think we're going to be there until the end. It's not until the sun rises that Jacob met Esau and they embraced. That will be in the kingdom. Until that time, I don't expect peace there. Now, what date will that be? You all will have an opinion on that. We might mention that more later. For now, respect all of us and put a question mark there. So I think we've got some decades yet to unfold before us. But what I want to point out on this screen is you notice a certain symmetry here that suggests we might be on the right path in our interpretation. The first part here up to the end of the first feeding was 44 years. And then from there to the second feeding, 31 years. Now, I actually have opinions about what those numbers mean symbolically. I won't discuss it here. It's a little bit tenuous. But I don't think they're random. This 40 years, we can all agree, is a period of testing and trial and development, pending the time of trouble in 1914. Then notice what happens. To 1945, a symmetrical period of 31 years appears, and then a symmetrical period of 44 years appears to take us to the end of the earthquake experience. So I actually think that these numbers, the symmetry, is telling us we're on the right road. Now, I think there's symmetry that goes to here as well. We'll save that to the end. We'll see if we have time. So I think we're on the right track. We're in the third phase of the time of trouble. It's that third phase we're going to focus on more now. Now, Brother Jim will recognize this. This is something from the Herald going back about a year ago. There was a special edition of the Herald on the time of trouble and the end of the age. And this is all about the seven plagues. Now, I've changed one thing here only, and that is the very first one. Brother Jim focuses on the world events, and he had a very engaging world event, a long depression that started about 1873 and worked in for several years. I think the long depression is the name they put to it. But I'm putting here as the first event the harvest truth movement, because I'm looking more at the spiritual rather than the natural experience that's involved here. Other than that, everything you see here is really from Brother Parkinson, but I happen to think he's on the right track. So these are the seven plagues that take you from the beginning of the harvest all the way through to Armageddon, which is the seventh plague. Now, you notice that Brother Jim has put dates here. I think the first one takes you up to 1914, and I think that's the 40 years of truth movement. Now, when you go back to look at the Exodus plagues, it's getting too complex, so we won't show that on the screen, but you remember that in Revelation, that gives us the seven last plagues, but there were three plagues before that in Exodus. The plague just before the last seven was a plague of lice, and the first of the last seven was a plague of flies. I think both of those are similar because they both represent disturbing things, not deadly things, disturbing things that hit Christendom. The first was the Adventist movement, the plague of lice, and next after that, the truth movement, which caused a grievous sore on religious people. That's what it says in Revelation 16. Those that had the mark of the beast, it was like an open sore they couldn't cure. It wasn't deadly, but it was certainly bothersome. Now we get into World War I to 1918, the Great Depression to 1939, World War II to 1945. That means we have finished four plagues up to 1945, four of the last seven. And we come to plague five. That's the East versus West problem, taking you up to the fall of the power of the Soviet Union in 1989. And I think that was plague five. Now, in Revelation, that plague is said to be on the seat of the beast. Well, that's papacy. And after World War II, when the Soviet Empire covered over Eastern and Central Europe, that was really a severe blow to papacy. Now, they've recovered somewhat from that. I think we're beyond the fifth plague. But that's where the heart of papacy's strength really was. It was not in Western Europe. They were already growing more liberal there. But in Middle and Eastern Europe, that's where the real entrenched Catholic support was. And that was really a plague on the seat of the beast. I remember, was it Pope John Paul the 23rd said in those days, "The church seems fated to die." Now, after that, I think they changed their tune after the fall of the Soviet Empire. So there's five plagues that take you up through 1989. So when we are looking for this period of time from 1989 to the kingdom, we really only have to focus clearly on two plagues. And that would be plague six and plague seven. But plague seven is really at the very end. As a matter of fact, you remember the last plague in Exodus was when the death of the firstborn was caused by that death angel. And the Lord's people, the firstborn, well, they were in the house that night under the blood, and they were passed over. I think that Passover represents the deliverance of the saints into the first resurrection beyond the veil. The point is that when the seventh plague begins, the church effectively is on their way home. So the church only has one plague to go through, more from our point of view, one more plague, and that's plague six. So that's what we're going to look at more carefully. Now, here we have these plagues. I thank Brother Jim for this analysis. I'll just mention this, that in Revelation, I think Revelation, when it gives you the symbolism of the plague, is looking more on the spiritual impact than on the political and social impact. I think back in the Exodus account, it's more the world events. But I do think that Jim has got these lined up properly. So now we're going to go on. We're going to look now at the sixth one. Now, Brother Jim has put here deep depression question. Well, now, you know, in Revelation, the sixth plague was the drying up of the River Euphrates. And the River Euphrates is what gave economic lifeblood to Great Babylon. It supported Great Babylon of antiquity. So maybe the drying up of the River Euphrates, the withering of it, that allows for Babylon to be overthrown, maybe that refers to an economic withering of the Western powers. Now, when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, that was pretty much the end of I think they collapsed because of economic reasons more than anything else. I mean, they realized in competition with the West, they just weren't winning. And the West was doing pretty good. Now, if you dry up the economic power of the West, you're preparing now for the final end. The East didn't have it. The West is going to wither, and so it's going to be difficult. So we're going to look at number six as an economic concern. We'll see if that pans out. So here we are. There's that list of Elijah's experiences. Plagues 1 through 5 take you up to 1989. Then the Soviet Union Empire fell. Papacy was freed from their big burdens. We have plagues 6 and 7 yet to go through. So that's where we're going to focus. And we come next to Paul's journey to Rome. Now that's Acts 27. Now we put this map on because it's pretty, but it doesn't have a lot of dates and points. We'll have that on the next one, hand-drawn map that'll be a lot less beautiful. But here's where Paul went in Acts chapter 27. He started from Caesarea, and his first voyage was up to Sidon. We'll talk about that as a picture of the truth movement in a moment. Then on to Myra through 2 seas of wind. Well, those winds represent the winds of war of the first part of the time of trouble. And we said before, all the brethren were expecting one big war, turned out to be 2. Here you have a marker for that. It went through the Sea of Cilicia and the Sea of Pamphylia, and the winds were against them. I think that shows 2 periods of wind before finally they get to Myra, where they change ship. Well, I'll talk more about that in just a moment. But then they leave here to a place called Cnidos, and that's the last outpost of the mainland. Then they divert to Crete, to Fair Haven, and then through a storm, they end up at Melita. And that's what the next diagram is going to show. We won't show going onward gradually to the kingdom, up to Rome, where finally, I think, all the prisoners are given to a new authority, and it's a picture of the kingdom. Now, time is short here. I buzzed through that very quick. But, you know, there's been articles on this. Brother Luke wrote an article in the Herald, I think in 2008 or 9. Last year in January, there was an article. The year before that, 2018, there was an article. There's been discourses on this, so this is not fresh information. It comes from the studies originated by Brother Ray Luke. But we'll show you what we think it means by this diagram. I think the whole book of Acts is all about the gospel age. We don't have time to highlight all of that. But the closing book of the book of Acts is about the harvest period. So they start off here in 1874, and there's all kinds of mentions that tell you we're in a period where the church is still under the thumb of the powers that be. Caesarea tells you we're still under the kingdoms of this world. The captor of Paul, he was a prisoner, was a man named Julius. Reminds you of Julius Caesar. He was of the band of Augustus. Reminds you of Augustus. Reminds you of all the powers of the old world that we're still under in 1874. They travel on fairly nicely to Sidon, and there Paul is given liberty to have fellowship with the brethren. Now, I think Old Tyre represents papacy, and Sidon, the sister city, would represent the Protestants. And I think it was from the Protestant area that the truth movement really had its big impact from 1874 to 1914. But then finally, they launched out. They immediately hit these winds, 2 winds, and they landed in Myra, the underbelly of Turkey. And after the 2 winds of war, that would take you to 1945. And it says they changed ship at that point at Myra. They changed their ship. I think it's telling us we're in a new ship of state. The old governments are gone, and a new institution of governments begins to take their place. And I think that's the democracies that have placed the old kingdoms in Europe. They launch out. They again have a long, they have some mild winds to impact, and they get to this place called Cnidos. It's a place even on the map today, spelled a little differently. The last outpost in Turkey. Now I have this shown in the Mediterranean Sea because it's actually in the water, sort of. It's a projection of a peninsula out into the sea. And I think that represents leaving the mainland, leaving the old world behind. And even in 1989, when Bush and Gorbachev got together, they talked about a new world order. The old world they're leaving behind. And I think when you launch out from Eidos, you're in a new world order. Now, I remember at that time thinking, what limits us now from going right on to the kingdom, right on to the center of world empire, Rome, where they would be under a new management? And I really didn't know. But I remember that convention in Palo Alto in 1989, talking about this to the brethren, not knowing what was next. But what was next was the fire of Islamic insurgency, more billows, more troubles, and the ship had to divert southward. And it said they passed Salmanay, which means billows, where the sea billows would roll in. And I think those are the troubles we have gone through most recently. And if this is the period of the sixth plague, financial difficulties, I think now we've been seeing those financial difficulties. So that's where we are today. We're not yet to fair haven. Now, the first big billow that was a financial downturn was in the year 1999 at the end into the year 2000 and of what we call the dot-com bust. And if you look at a chart of the Dow, you know, finances at that time, boy, it was a sharp downturn. It was remarkable, the likes of which we hadn't seen for a long time. And it started to improve, and then we got to 2001, 9/11, and it marked even further down. And it was really a radical downturn for the market, rivaling the downturn of the Great Depression. I mean, it was bad. We've come back from that farther than what I expected. But coming back almost to where we were, maybe a little beyond, we got to 2008. And that's when the financial crisis hit us. And I think that was the second main financial billow in the kind of the withering of the River Euphrates over a long period of time. Now, you know, you go back here, you see that from 1989 to the kingdom, you've got a long time. I think it's like five decades. So these are going to be long spread out experiences of the gradual withering of the economic power of the West, because we're not even going to be here for most of Plague 7. So I think we've got a long time going by Salmanay with these billows. Now, since this crisis has hit recently, 2020, the financial impact has been severe. I don't think I even remember as sharp a drop in the other two as we have experienced recently. But it's bounced back a little. Now the question is, what's going to happen from here? And the answer is, I don't know. But I suspect it's going to take longer to recover from this than we have, than some are maybe predicting. We'll see. Before January of this year, I honestly wasn't sure where we were. Were we already at fair haven? And in an article last year, I said, maybe, but I don't think so. It's just too long to be at fair haven by this time. So I think we're still rounding Salmanay. And I think we're seeing the third billow that I was anticipating. Will there be another one? I don't know. I kind of think maybe this is the last big debacle. We'll see. In retrospect, perspective, that'll iron these things out. But I think this is the last big downturn because I think it's going to take a while for us really to start to come out of it. And I think there's going to be other social impacts that are consequential through this. We'll see. We'll see how things work. But ultimately, it says they're going to get to the fair haven. And that's where they had stability, but not riches. And I think the Western world is going to look back and bemoan that things have not gone as well economically as they wished. And they stay there for quite a while. And then they decide winter is approaching. As a matter of fact, it says the fast was passed. I think that means the Day of Atonement. I think that means the age of sacrifice is beginning to close down. But they wanted to launch out to a place called Phoenix. Now that's in the King James a different word, but newer translations have Phoenix. Phoenix, you know, is that bird that rose out of the ashes. I think it means they want to try one more effort to regain some old glory. Paul advises them, don't launch out. It will be disaster. You'll get caught in a storm that will threaten the very ship and all the people on it. And they think about it, and the wind blows gently, and think, I think we can make it. So they launch out just a little distance so they can winter at Phoenix. and they immediately get swept up by this eastern wind, Euroclydon, and they're swept down to the island of Clauda. And that's where for 3 days they just try to get things under control. Now, you know, I think this is the time where in the sixth plague, because of the withering of the river Euphrates, that I think is an economic withering, they're required to come together and do something to hold society in stability. And so it says in the sixth plague, the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. I think that's political and too religious, try to kind of lean to each other for moral support, to hold things together as a moral force in society. I can't blame them for doing that. I can understand that, and I think to many Christian people, they're going to recognize that at least some moral force is trying to hold things together. The problem is they don't really understand the program. The real program is for the kingdom of Christ. And for trying to hold things together, they're working at cross purposes. And I think in this condition, it says they gather the kings of the earth to the valley of Megiddo, to the hill of Megiddo, and that's where the Battle of Armageddon takes place, and I think that's at Israel. So they're going to work at cross purposes with God by actually bringing the nations to Israel to impose something that God doesn't want on Israel. And I think they're just going to get caught up in this storm of passion and difficulty, and I think things are going to start to really pull apart. Now, the first day it says, They tried to undergird the ship with ropes. I think that's holding society together. We're not there yet. Things are not so bad yet that it looks like things are pulling apart. I think we've got another 9 years to go. Well, we'll think about that in a moment. So I think we're going to be throwing through this third billow and the repercussions for a while before we even get to Fair Haven. And after that, then a few years later, then we're going to get caught up in this storm. Now, how long will this storm last? Well, it says the storm, oh, sorry, I forgot. There's 3 days, 3 days of special. The first day they tried to undergird the ship with ropes. The second day they threw out some cargo. The third day they even threw out tackling of the ship, so they were pretty much drifting. And I think that shows the first 3 years maybe of this episode are going to be very difficult. And the masters of the ship, the political rulers, are going to just do whatever they can to hold things together, and finally they're going to let loose and let go with the drift of whatever the masses are requiring. We'll see. We're not there yet. We got several years to go before we get there. So that storm lasts for 14 days, and it's all darkness. They can't see the sun or the moon or the stars for 2 weeks going on. And you know, that's what Matthew 24 says is going to happen just before the end. It says the sun will be darkened, the moon should not give its light, the powers of the heaven will fall. All of that, I think, is a picture of this storm. How long will that storm last? Well, it's 14 days. Could those 14 days be 14 years of special, intense difficulty? I think maybe so. You know, the 4 years of World War I were pretty rough, but it didn't cause the world to turn in unison to look above. The 6 years of World War II were pretty rough, but it still didn't cause the whole world to look upward. I think these 14 years will do that. Finally, at the end, Paul says to them, you haven't had any food for 14 days. He says, it's going to be all right. Things are going to work out well. Paul comes, I'm mixing two episodes here, but Paul says to the, before that happens, still toward the end of the storm, Paul tells them, I think everything is going to be okay. You're going to lose the ship, but the people are all going to be saved. And Paul said, I believe that because an angel told me. And I believe that angel and what he said, because I believe and I worship the God that sent that angel. Well, I think that's us in the ship. I think Paul there is the church. We're going to have a message of something good to say to people. Yeah, the ship of state has to go down. It's on its way out. But the people are all going to be saved. Now, how do we know that? Because we've heard it from an angel. I think that's the seventh angel of Revelation. The seventh messenger has told us this is the plan of God. The kingdom is on its way. After the distress, we're going to have a better time. That'll be our last closing message, I think, to the world. And after that, at midnight, they come up to this place they don't know. It's called Melita. We call it the island of Malta. That's where ultimately their ship is going to be destroyed. Midnight? Midnight was the time of the last plague in Revelation. That's when the death angel passed over, and that's the last conflict. I think there the church goes home. Paul and the ship after that represents the great company. After that, when they finally come ashore on the island, the little island, I think, represents Israel. Then Paul represents the ancient worthies. Okay, can't go through all of that. That's too much. But where are we today? I think what we're seeing is the third billow and this economic downturn that is going to ultimately be an impact, going to last for some years. Ultimately, we'll get to Fair Haven. We're going to pass through some more stormy weather, then have stability, and then launch out where they shouldn't launch out. Now, when you think about this 14 days of storm, there are 14, the number 14 often precedes the kingdom and pertains to the kingdom. And I think that's because it's the second age of redemption. Now, you know, the first age of redemption, the gospel age, has seven stages of the church. And on every day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, there were seven lambs sacrificed. But in the Feast of Tabernacles, picturing the kingdom, there were double that, 14 lambs every day. And in Ezekiel chapter 40, when you have a vision of the unfolding kingdom, it's in the 14th year from the devastation of the city that that vision comes. When Hezekiah was saved from the onslaught of Sennacherib, picturing Israel saved from the onslaught of Gog from the north and his allies, it was the 14th year of Hezekiah when he was delivered. When Amraphel finally was dispatched after in the second onslaught of the Middle East, it was 14 years after his first venture. And finally in Acts 27, 14 days of storm. So maybe those 14 days of storm are entirely symbolic of the fact that we're approaching the kingdom, this double seven, the second age of redemption. Maybe, or maybe the 14 days, like the 40 days that Elijah went, you know, went up to Mount Horeb, maybe they're a day for a year. Maybe it's 14 days, 14 years of storm that we're looking to that is coming up. Now, you all know I have a date where I think the kingdom is coming. We're not going to talk a lot about that today. Time is going too quick. But if you back up from that time, 14 years, that would take you to that year, 2029. Now, I think that's right. But you all know I'm persuaded on this. I won't try to persuade you all today of that point. But that gives us some clue as to how far away we are from the storm breaking out. About 9 years to go, if we're on the right track. If we're on the right track. Now, based as a follow through on that, I want to show you this diagram. We started with this earlier, and we showed you that the 44 years here, the 30 up to 1843, then 31 years to the harvest, 40 years to the time of trouble, 31 and 44 are symmetrical. That gave us some hope that maybe we're on the right track. But there's more to be said, taking you up to the kingdom, if that's the right date. If that's the right date, we got 54 years to go. Well, it turns out that if the date when the kingdom really begins, as opposed to the date that Miller thought the millennial reign would begin, if you compare those two, they're exactly 200 years apart. Now, that's not a coincidence. That's because Miller had this at the end of 2300 days, and, as I think, this is the end of 2500 days. Okay, so I don't think it's coincidence. But now if you look back, 1789 was the French Revolution. To 1829 was a period of 40 years, and then 14 years more before their expectations, you know, came to 1843. Now, up the scale 200 years. 1989 was that earthquake, the overthrow of the last remnant of that old dominating power. 40 years later would take you to 2029, which would be the time when this storm would break out. And then 14 years more of storm would take you to the kingdom. Now, I won't push more than that. I think that's the point. But I think here we are at the end of the age. 1874 has passed. We're all ready to the 1914 time of trouble. This would be over 100 years, we know, because we've already gone more than 100 years beyond 1914. I think we've got a few more years to go. I think we've got about 23 years to go. But when you look back, at the experiences that we've been through, I think in the harvest, we've been through the winds of war, the earthquake of breaking up so that we left the old world and all its connections in 1989. Finally, Israel is recouping and doing better. We're passing through the billows of financial upheaval. I think we've passed through. We're now in the third billow. I think we're going to be in it for a while. Finally, we'll get to Fairhaven. And then the 14 years of storm are going to be unleashed. That's what I think we're looking to. So where are we now? We're at the end of the billow period, still involved in this problem. We'll see. We'll see how things go. That's my best take. I can't point to something in the scripture that tell us a pandemic directly. And how this third billow came, it surprised me as much as 1989 surprised me those many years ago. Somebody asked me, what's going to be the precipitating cause of another financial debacle? I never would have said a virus emanating from a lab in China. I just wouldn't have guessed. But it looks like that's what it is. And it's had impacts that I could hardly believe. And now we're here into an economic collapse practically. It looks like things are going to start opening up again, but how long will the effects last and how much deeper will the financial episode take us? We'll see. We'll wait and see. Thank you. You've always been very patient. At this point, I'm going to stop talking. Brother Stefan, I'll turn it back to you. And any questions or comments, we can entertain.